Hello, welcome to the Comic Connoisseur. So now we'll be talking about Black Widow, the latest Marvel movie in 2 years. Of course, my co-host, Shady from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also with us is Red Ink.
What up?
So, Friday morning I woke up, and I was like, okay, let's go on this Disney Plus thing and watch this thing. And it was okay. It wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. It was like, okay.
I don't have to say anything. Ben said everything that I was going to say. It wasn't great. It was good. It was okay. I mean, it's takes place like a couple of days after Captain America Civil War, so really this should have come out like sometime in the last 5 years, maybe.
Yeah, and that's the thing I want to point out, is I think this movie would have been received a lot better if, say, we're somehow able to have made this movie, transport it back in time to 6 months after Civil War and play in theaters. I think it would have been better received. Possibly. I don't know if superhero fatigue or Marvel fatigue is the right word to use, but I feel like the fact that we sort of got a chance to really breathe and not watch Marvel for a while, it's like it went from an excitement to an obligation to a thing in the back of your head, and now that it's back, it's sort of like, can it graduate back to excitement? Can it go back all the way there? Because we straight passed obligation. Obligation's gone.
Yeah. How about you, Red? What were your kind of initial thoughts?
It was too little, too late. Like, for me, it was like, it made me wonder, did they bump this movie in order to show Captain Marvel?
Yes.
Because if this movie was made at the same time as Captain Marvel, it would fit in better than Captain Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, if they were able to transplant this exact movie somehow with time travel, take this reel, move it back to right 6 months after Civil War, plop it into Kevin Feige's desk and say, here it is, and he was able to release it like in a month, I think it would have been better received. Would have been like a lot more excitement behind it. A lot more people be like, yeah, we get to see her story. And there have been a lot more investment of where she is going and where she has been versus where we are now, where the investment is, okay, she's dead. We're not watching Natasha Romanoff. We're watching Blonde Chick, who we already know largely telegraphed is going to be the new Black Widow. Even in the opening scene, we knew it. It's a known quantity now.
Yeah.
I like the movie the first time I saw it, when it was called Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked it before when it was called Jason Bourne.
Yeah. See, from Iron Man 2, I was like, sweet, we're getting, you know, John Romita Sr. style Black Widow, and I thought, you know what, I could totally go for a Black Widow movie. I wish it would have been a little, I mean, as much of, you're going to have that whole slather with the Marvel Cinematic Universe mayonnaise, I wish it would have been a little more to kind of quote Joss Whedon, who in the wiki said, you know, he wanted to do it, and he said he wanted to do something like a good paranoid John Le Carre on crack sort of thing. And I think I would have enjoyed the movie a hell of a lot more if it was a little heavier on, even if they made it like more of a spy-fi thing, like what they did here. Yeah, it's Natasha, it's dealing with the aftermath of Civil War. Like, it's too much of a bridge movie to just kind of spoon for you. You wanted a black, oh, here comes the airplane, here's your Black Widow movie. You know, we got what what most of us were asking for, but it wasn't as filling as we wanted it to be. Because I mean, I loved the whole family aspect of, you know, we see her, you know, in the late 80s, you know, she was part of this Russian sleeper cell family.
That was 96.
Was that 96?
That was 96.
Okay, I totally misread that number.
Do you think Natasha Romanoff is like 45, 50?
Well, technically in the comics, she's old as Captain America, but that's something else entirely. So it's just...
Well, technically Scarlett Johansson is the same age as me. So.
Yeah. No, okay, so, you know, she's undercover with this fake family, and she's just kind of buying into it. It's not like Yelena, her little sister, who's like kind of completely bought into it. And like that whole setup, I like the fact that they're kind of setting the emotional hook like that.
It's,
and
the one problem I have with that scene is you could tell that they really wanted this to happen during the Cold War. They wanted this part of the story to be pure Cold War, but they couldn't because the names, the ages don't match up, and there's no way to like back off and try to make Natasha 20 years older in the storyline. So they,
yeah, I mean, the Cold War has kind of always been there between governments all over the world to this day. But what, for me, what that scene set up was when you have the family reunite later on. And I have to say that the reunion dinner, that spoke to me because within 10 minutes of Red Guardian and the White Widow and Black Widow showing up, you know, Mama Widow had this whole spread out over her table. And that was my great aunt Carrie. Whenever we would go and visit her and my uncle Harry in Yorkton, like within 5 minutes, that woman's cleared the table. She's got a 10 course meal spread out, and she's gone back in the kitchen to start making soup. Like, that speaks to my Ukrainian heritage right there. That's like, you know, I appreciate that. But as far as like Natasha's family, I can't help but love Red Guardian. Like, David Arbor, like, he wasn't playing like the sheriff from Stranger Things. He wasn't even trying to do Hellboy. Like, he played him like his character is, this guy that, you know, he believed in the Soviet doctrine. He did his part for, you know, the country, and then he got screwed over by this asshole, and he's put in prison. He's just been living his life out there, and he comes out, and he's just, you know, he's trying to reconnect with his family. He's trying to, like, you know, regain that former sense of duty and glory that he had. I wish they would have kept the cut from the trailer versus what they used in the movie, is it still fits. I mean, I was snickering the whole time he's struggling to get into his suit again, but when he came out, I would have liked that one from the trailer where he's just a little, he's just like, ah, oh, yeah, you know.
Well, all I got to say about that is part-time.
Yeah. But the thing I think that bothered me the most about this movie, besides how much it's a bridge movie it is I had this movie plotted out in my head by about 15 minutes in.
Everyone like I just has. Had
yeah I Ben just I mean, a lot of people probably didn't. Those like us who have watched entirely too many movies and read entirely too many comics are honestly not that surprised when things go true to form and that entire checklist is ticked off. The only thing I didn't see coming, honestly, was the how they recontextualized Taskmaster, and that was my a really sore point for me, because the Taskmaster in the comics is one of my favorite Marvel villains / anti-heroes. You know, we you, I, and Red have talked about it on air and off air. You know, it's going to be a guy. I thought it was going to be a guy. You guys, it's probably a woman. You were right. It's, and even if it was a woman, that didn't bother me. It's, I mean, it goes to Dracov, who's like General Dracov, who's the main villain of the film, and just, you know, abusing and manipulating women all these years. And it just seemed like they doubled down on that just to have like a big name villain character that turns out to be not that much of a threat.
They're so stupid too. Like, As soon as they mention this little girl got blown up and Dracov's daughter, I'm like, that's Taskmaster.
I honestly thought she was dead, but as soon as I saw the actress's Olga Kirilenko, who for the listeners who don't know, she was the Bond girl in Quantum of Solace and the Russian prostitute in the first Hitman movie. I was like, oh, no, she's totally Taskmaster. I was like, okay, we got a female Taskmaster. Cool. It's just how they went about, like, she got fucked up in that explosion that Natasha orchestrated, and her asshole mad scientist father just sticks a chip in her head and turns her into a weapon because he honestly doesn't care about anyone other than himself.
The Promethean, you mean?
Yeah.
And, It feels weird because I remember Red saw the first trailer and said, it's a woman. And it's because of the height. Because ScarJo is, what, 5'2"?
Yeah.
And,
about that.
And Taskmaster was 5'2 as well. And it's like, okay, it's a woman. The other thing that, like I said, is there's a, for the listeners that don't know, there is a DC villain called the Promethean whose big thing is he literally implanted a microchip in his brain.
You mean Prometheus?
The Prometheus, pardon me. It literally puts a microchip in his brain to do everyone's fighting moves. And it's just really weird that they pretty much did lock, stock, and barrel for Taskmaster in this movie.
Well, mutants don't exist, so.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
You can't go with the original Taskmaster.
And.
At least not a mutant in the comics. He just has photographic reflexes.
And
he's a goddamn
mutant. And also in the DC comics, the Prometheus was famous for trying to fight Batman, and Batman just hacked his headset and fried his brain.
Because he downloaded the what is, well, basically
Stephen Prometheus. Hawking's?
Yeah, he programmed Prometheus's nervous system to be the same as Professor Stephen Hawking, and then he got taken out with a whip crack from Catwoman to the groin, which his great-great-grandchildren are going to probably be feeling that.
Well, if he has a nervous system of Stephen Hawking, he felt nothing.
That's fucking... That's bad.
Yeah.
Stephen Hawking was a well-known comic fucking reader and shit. Like, he obviously read Batman. Imagine being Stephen Hawking and reading Batman and then fucking seeing that.
And you just get to speak and spell, what the fuck? But in the current day of, like, you know, all the Me Too movement and all that, I mean, does not come as a shock that the primary... like General Dracov, you know, the big bad of this movie and his whole modus operandi is abusing women to get what he wants. And, you know, there's a spectrum of villainy in certain movies. Now, you have guys like, say, the rich bratty villains that, you know, like steal a nuclear weapon and then get all like, why are you ruining my plan on one end of that spectrum. Then you have guys like Dracov who are on the other end of the spectrum who are hide in the showers and think they're so much better because, you know, I've hid from the world for years and amassed all this power. You know, I've just hidden like a bitch on this floating Russian made not at all ripping off a helicarrier setup. I mean, what was the point? Like, you've barely acted on any of this power for years.
You can't kill me because you can smell my farts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A smorgasbord of using ideas from different villains and characters, like the smell your farts thing. That's almost Purple Man-esque.
Yeah. Now, as far as pheromones go, and you guys would probably know better than I, like, is pheromones, is that strictly a, like, a smell thing, or do you not, like, absorb those through the skin or
it's
something?
Your BO.
Okay. I get that, but it's just how he set up that every widow has, like, the idea that every widow is keyed to his farts, you know, his scent, whatever, and they can't attack him because it ticks that switch in their brain. I was like, okay, that's a cool, sneaky... bitch move that a villain like this would do. I'm cool with that. But the whole idea that in order to stop smelling his farts, Natasha has to break her nose a certain way to sever a nerve. Does that actually work?
I don't know about nerves, but you certainly, when you break your nose, you can't smell shit.
Yeah, it sounds a little, they try to make it sound super clinical, but it's, if they went for like a Whedon-esque line about that, like how in Avengers when Hawkeye was knocked out by Black Widow and that knocked out the fucking, mind control, she says, I recalibrate your brain with concussive force or something like that. Like, that's the point where you can use a Whedon-esque line. But this whole sever the nerve thing is a little too clinical, a little too the other thing I have to add about this whole process of the movie is we already knew the Red Room was a thing. We already knew that there was going to be more Black Widows, but Black Widow, her sister, Mama Widow, they all feel so much less special now because there's literally a factory of them. And they're all, other than the three I named, they're all, like, not white. Every one of them.
Well, I mean,
which is weird for someone who came from Soviet Russia to have a secret spy program of ethnic women. This is
it's what I don't see what's wrong with that. You have this,
the Russian, the especially Soviet Russians.
Black women can't be Russian. Asian women,
they can today, but during Soviet Russia they did not let fucking minorities and color people,
well, yeah, but I mean that's
into 20, fucking Russia.
That was like 2016. I mean, over time he probably started, it's like, you know, maybe I should put, you know, get a little color in.
He's a rigid old piece of the old Soviet arm still functioning. That's the whole point of the character. You can't be like, well maybe he's a little progressive now. Come on.
He's not being progressive. He's just
like Baron Zemo, it's all of a sudden woke or some shit.
He's not woke and he's not being progressive. He's just a bitch in power who decided that, you know, this might work for me too. Like, he's, the guy has absolutely, Dracov has absolutely no qualms whatsoever of mutilating people mentally and probably physically to get what he wants. So why wouldn't he, like, you know, try something?
Take an ice cream scoop and just scoop it right
there. Basically. And you know what? Here's the thing. You know, he probably did that to the guys there too. Because did any of those guys say anything other than, you know, checking Sector 6, you know, something like that?
Yeah, they go in. They go in like you're stuffing a turkey, and yeah. Chop the giblets out, and
yeah. So the American, like, escape to Cuba, and, you know, Mama Widow's taken away because she took a bullet, you know, running from the cops, and the girls are separated, and they go through, you know, we see the whole snippets of the Red Room training, and then, like I said, it's 2 days after, you know, what happened in Captain America Civil War. And I think it was a little odd, just, I know it's Marvel and Marvel movies, but, you know, is this really an operation the Secretary of Defense is going to take part in, or is this just part of William Hurt's contract that, you know, not Thunderbolt Ross shows up? Because I'm sorry, that Sam Elliott is the only man I accept to play Thunderbolt Ross, and they should have re-signed his ass for the Marvel movie universe.
Way too late for that now.
I know, but I'm still bitter about that. You know, and of course she scammed him, although I did like that, you know, I fell for that trick again where she's in the bathroom and watching it happening and talking to Ross and all that. And then you have this Mason dude show up out of nowhere who... he's in, what, three scenes in the movie.
You need a helicopter? I got helicopters.
Yeah. You know, he's this, from my research, he's not any sort of character that's ever been in the comics.
I'm convenience personified.
And I think he was a diversity hire because he's on the fucking movie poster. You barely affected the plot, sir. You do not get to be on the movie poster.
So wait, let me get this straight. The old Soviet general. Oh, he could be winning. Let's get some color in here, but the
you can't turn this
the
around.
Arms, the arms dealer is a diversity hire.
No, it was, please, like you. Oh yes, that's so funny because you've never made a fucking mistake in your life. No, I'm not like that at all. It's just the character didn't need to be on the movie poster, whether he was black, white, or Asian. It didn't matter. Like, the character did almost nothing aside from, like, hand Natasha the keys. You know, like, I don't see any reason why he should be on the poster. That's it. You know.
Fair enough.
And what did you think of the Prison Break?
Well, Red Guardian was fun, but he's also a fucking joke. Like,
yeah. like we were looking forward to seeing him actually fight the Taskmaster from the trailers, and it's just him like getting knocked around a bit until all of a sudden he locks into Taskmaster, falling into his cell, and Mama Widow hanging the butt.
Yeah, I think he got a couple of shots in during that fight before Taskmaster got caged, but. Yeah, that was about it. I did like in the prison where, you know, he's just how he's messing with all those guys, arm wrestling him. That one, that big slab of meat sits down and talks. It's like Captain America wasn't thawed out until that, which is true. But I think that's something the writers put in to kind of nod to the commie smasher Cap from
the Grand Director.
Yeah, the Grand Director. Whether or not they ever make anything of that, I probably doubt. But, I mean, he could have fought a Captain America. And we found out in you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier about Isaiah. So who's to say that didn't happen?
There's other Captain Americas besides Steve Rogers and fucking the U.S. agent.
Yeah. But that's like, what I'm saying.
There's that one guy who has his fucking the flag fucking tattooed on his face.
Yeah.
That was Nuke from Daredevil.
No, it was a different guy. It was Captain America villain.
But Red has a good point here. It's like he could have fought an A Captain America, and he was entertaining. I will give him this. He was entertaining, but it's like the big Russian goofy dad it wears down on me a little because we're supposed to believe this guy was chosen to do undercover work when in the end we see he's just a blunt instrument.
The other thing that got to me is we see Isaiah, and Isaiah is fucking ripped at like
80.
At like 80 years old. But this guy is big and fucking fat and chunky while living in prison, while he's fucking starving in prison. Like, come on, man.
He took the RC Cola version of the Super Soldier Serum. Like, that, he didn't even get the one that Howard Stark cracked at the beginning of Civil War that we see when Bucky kills Tony's parents. Like, this is whatever the Russians came up with. Oh, sure, he's got super strength, but that doesn't mean he can't get a punch. Which I didn't even think he was straight. Like, I thought the Red Guardian thing was going to come after that opening sequence until he, like, grips the trailer hitch and just flips that rusted-out semi-trailer like that, so... But yeah, no, I mean, he could have fought like the Grand Director or, you know, there's the one guy, what, Spirit of 76 in the comics was Cap. You know, it's a nod to comic book history that I appreciated.
I think they retconned that because in the actual comics, Captain America fought in fucking Vietnam.
Yes.
Like after he was fought out, he went to Vietnam. But I think they retconned it that there's a different Captain America. Was fought in Vietnam?
Well, at this point, because with Marvel's sliding time scale, like everything in Marvel comic history has happened within the last 10 to 15 years. So when Steve Rogers was frozen, that's when you have like Jack Monroe and that school teacher who was like obsessed with Captain America and the government gave him like plastic surgery to look like Steve. So yes, it's the timeline is a little wibbly wobbly at this point. And what did you guys think of Yelena how they handled the, the second Black Widow here.
I mean, she's okay.
She has an accent?
Well, okay, this is one thing I did like. There was one interesting point that I liked in the story is where there Yelena, Red Guardian, and Natasha are all flying away in the very convenient military helicopter, and Natasha does not use her Russian accent once in that scene. If you actually watch the movie carefully, she actually does use Russian and a Russian accent in only two scenes in this movie. The rest she's and there's one part that I liked is where one of them says, "You've gone west on us."
Yeah, because I think I've only watched it twice so far, but I know she was speaking Russian when Yelena and Natasha were in the copter, like trying to rescue Alexei from the prison.
Yes.
Which I did kind of like the CGI they used where he started scrambling up the walls and you see him like pop up a little bit and then get taken out by that scrub with a shock stick.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I want to add about the Russian prison is everyone knows that Russians don't do arm wrestling in prisons anymore. They do slap fights.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
There's a YouTuber that does nothing but watch Russian slap fights in prisons on YouTube and reacts to them. Well, he does a lot of other things, but that's one of his bread and butter. Red knows who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So for some reason, when you described that, Ben, it made me think of Russian FPS. I wonder if that guy's even still doing it.
No, he's not doing. The government took away all his guns. But a Russian slap fight. Do you know what a Russian slap fight is, JT?
I can imagine, but maybe our listeners don't know.
Okay. Well, I don't want to sound like I'm educating a Ukrainian because you're more related to these are close to your people. I don't want to sound like I am stepping on your toes.
Just because I have Ukrainian blood in me, Ben, does not mean I know what a Russian slap fight is.
So I'm just trying to be culturally aware and as woke as Baron Zemo here. Okay. A Russian slap fight is when you have two people standing facing each other and their non-dominant hands are gripping so they can't move. And one person slaps the other person. And everyone gauges how much did he flinch? How much did his head move? How red is his face? And then the other guy slaps. And they do the same thing. Okay, how much does his head move? How red is his face? And they keep going until one of them gives up or one of them's knocked out.
Okay.
And I kind of want to picture Red Guardian doing a Russian slap fight where he just wham and the guy like fucking flips twice in the air and lands on his head.
Yeah, so what's gonna do more? What's he gonna do more damage with, slapping a dude or just arm wrestling?
All I'm saying is Russian slap fights are a thing.
Okay, I'm not saying they're not.
And now it's in your head. You're picturing that too. That just slap, flip, flip, face plant.
I'm pretty sure if he slapped that slab of beef that he mangled in the last arm wrestling thing there, that bitch would have gone flying. Which is why it's satisfied that when he goes to break out of the prison, he pokes his hand right through the security glass and knocks out those two knobs that were talking shit to him there when he got his mail call.
Yes.
Now, I'm looking at some of the trivia on the IMDb here. Apparently, one of the widows that spoke to Natasha after Yelena exploded the cure... Yes. In the air like that was named Ursa, which apparently is a nod to Ursa Major, who's like the vodka bear? Drinking werebear from the Winter Brigade in Marvel Comics. Some people are trying to argue that Mason, Natasha's, the cue for this movie is supposed to be based off a weasel from Deadpool, and I was like, No, that's too much of a stretch.
I've heard people try to say, well, the prison broke down, and that's where they keep Abomination, and that's why he's going to be in the Shang-Chi movie.
Nah, and by the way, the Abomination we saw in the Shang-Chi teaser trailer looks tiny compared to the one we had in the Ed Norton movie.
Yeah, but apparently the Ed Norton movie doesn't count anymore.
Then where did Thunderbolt Ross come from?
Well, I'm saying other people. I still count that movie. I love the Incredible Hulk movie, but that's me.
It's the Ang Lee movie that doesn't count.
Yeah. What Ang Lee movie?
Well, you were just talking about Sam Elliott. You were gushing about Sam Elliott just 20 minutes ago, man.
I don't know what you're talking about, Ben. Anyway, what did you guys think of the obvious setup for the Hawkeye TV show with the post-credit scene?
My thoughts was, oh, look, the camera's changed. Oh, they obviously filmed this during Falcon and Winter Soldier.
I kind of got that feeling, too.
You know, they only had Julia Louis-Dreyfus for like 2 weeks.
So they had to get everything shot all at once?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah. And by the way,
like, I thought, honestly, in that scene, what I thought was, like, she, like, cleans off the grave, and she does that whistle. I thought she was going to get a response.
I was waiting for that. And if that had happened, my fan theory, like, for all the people, is like, oh, you should bring Natasha back. You can't bring Natasha back. All you have to do is borrow the whole idea, like, from the Secret Empire thing of how she was executed by Hydra Cap, and then Bucky found her, like, 2 weeks later after everything fell apart, because, of course, the Russians cloned her and just downloaded her memories. Like, that... You're in a world of Hulks and Iron Man and, you know, Captain America with his super steroidal compound, you could fudge cloning somebody, is all I'm saying. But to have, you know, Valentina show up and just blow her nose and kind of ruin that moment, and then it's like, you're not supposed to bother me on my days off. Oh, you're working for Val. Well, we knew that was going to happen. Now, obviously, I don't think it's going to... Black Widow 2 and Hawkeye 1 and Hawkeye 2 are probably going to end up teaming up by the end of that series.
Not even by the end. This is what I picture is going to happen. Is there's going to be a little bit of a fight, a kerfuffle, this is all a misunderstanding situation, and to sort of establish everything, the changing of the guard, and make Kate Bishop look like, oh, she's a big deal. She's going to knock out Baby Widow here. And then they're going to be like, okay, now we're going to sit down and talk. Okay, we're all cool. Let's handle the next thing. That's what they're going to do. 85% chance. That's what
I don't think that's going to happen at all. In fact, I would like to be surprised what happens. I just figure by the end of the show, they're going to team up in some capacity. What made me really interested in that is, now, based on what Val's doing, you know, setting Yelena after Clint and saying he's the reason Natasha's dead, you know, how did she find out about that? You know, what's her end game? Like, I'm interested to see, you know, what, and this is all in service to, you know, building up whatever the next big Thanos of the MCU is going to be. I mean, what? Yeah, or potentially Galactus, but we'll see.
I forgot.
I'm just saying. The thing that I absolutely, like, my number one thing that I loved about this movie is we didn't get all the details, but we finally get an explanation. It's like, this is like Budapest all over again. You and I remember that very differently. You know, we get a lot more information about that. Not all the details, but the picture's a little clearer, and I really appreciated that.
All right, well.
I remember seeing the picture of Hawkeye, and it's like, oh, look, Jeremy Renner gets a picture.
He gets a little bit of a paycheck today.
Yeah.
Not a big one, but he'll be able to get his groceries this week.
And I mean, that's one of the things that Ben and I have been talking about offline is the more new Marvel Disney Plus series. They seem to be, what do you call that, executive orders?
Yes.
To introduce a young Avenger in every single one of those fucking series.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, isn't like America Chavez getting her own series?
Oh, that's going to be so fucking
She's going to be in... She's going to be in the fucking Doctor Strange movie.
Right, okay. Because I couldn't remember. Kang.
Yeah, we'll talk about Kang next week.
I thought Kang was showing up in Quantumania.
We're going to talk about Kang next week.
So, but I mean, what's something that you guys really liked in the movie?
Some of the action set pieces were pretty good. I was really disappointed that, when you get a chance to do, like, a spy thriller, even if it's a Marvel movie, if you're trying to do a spy thriller, you really should use that chance to, like, really stretch your muscles on doing, like, a really nice scene on the streets. But it feels like they're like, oh, we're just going to blow up the truck, throw in the subway, done. I like that they promised that, like, there was a promise of that, and because... You know, I loved like this car chase in Bourne Identity, and there was a pretty good car chase in one of the Mission Impossibles, but it's like nope, straight into the subway.
Red.
What I liked.
Yeah.
I think I liked the Red Guardian the most probably, but as I said, they did him dirty and made him a goof.
I mean, I agree. It's he was sadly just pretty much the comic relief for the movie, and I love that, you know, the whole mix of fatherly pride, but still being like a son of the Russian state is. I was really hoping, and this is just me, like that my girls are the strongest girls in the world. I was hoping that line would have made a comeback and like. The final act there, and yeah, like if there was something other than, you know, getting other than the dinner thing and getting a little more information in Budapest, and a friend of mine is like, if you say it Budapest one more time, I'm gonna smack you, JT. So I'm trying my best here. The as much as I disliked how they kind of butchered Taskmaster's character, and again, it's not that she's a woman, it's just. You know,
Taskmaster is supposed to be fucking dangerous.
Yeah.
When you fight that Taskmaster, it's supposed to be like you're fighting the entire Avengers team at once. Yes.
Yeah. You're fighting Daredevil. Sorry.
And they did him. They did Taskmaster dirty. Like.
Yeah. Like the overall design, I dug that. You know, it's a bit more armored up than normal. It's not the spandex costume.
With pirate boots cloak and a cape and a sword.
Mask. I mean, if they could have done something like the, I think it's like the 2000, I think it's the 2003 miniseries where he had this kind of tactical, you know, more action oriented sort of suit with some awesome art from the staff of Udon Comics. I highly suggest you check it out. It was good. And again, it didn't have to be a man, you know, because they named her Antonia, which is a nod to Taskmaster's name of Tony Masters, which is probably fake in the comics. It's there's something about having somebody have this natural ability to, you know, it's like he's a super polymath or something. You know, he's like how we spoke last time about Legacy. And I was talking about Mr. Terrific having, you know, he's this polymath, you know, he can just absorb new abilities and like that. I've always enjoyed that about the character, but to make it like this ugly, you know, Dracov just experimented on his daughter, not that he really cared about her surviving. He just say we could do this and make her into an even a huge weapon for me. It's just, yeah, it's like Red said, he got done dirty and, you know, just, yeah, it's like the costume was good. The rest of the character, not so much. And I think it was kind of a wasted thing to have him do like the Black Panther thing and then not have Red Guardian get carved up a little bit.
I mean, they were trying to sell this whole thing about he can use any of the, Taskmaster, she, whatever, can use any of the Avengers moves. It doesn't feel that threatening when any one of them could hold their own or even like escape easily. Like in the opening action scene of Natasha getting ambushed by Taskmaster, Natasha escaped pretty much unscathed and with the item. There was like if she escaped and she was a little bruised, and then yeah, a scene of her going to Budapest with some bruises, in a train bathroom trying to like dress her wounds, just like then we get a picture. Taskmaster dangerous. Taskmaster dangerous. It's like without that, it's like Taskmaster and a slight annoyance.
Now, I know you guys aren't one for this, but if I were to rewrite the movie to I still would have had Antonia in there as Taskmaster, but I would have had at some point she had enough of his abuse and she kills her dad, but she perpetuates the cycle. And she uses Dreykov, the idea of General Dreykov, as like this boogeyman. So like the final fight where you get rid of that whole pheromone lock thing, which was just so dumb. And you have this balls out, drag out fight through the corridors, off the side of this exploding, I keep wanting to call it a space station, or the not helicarrier. And you have them fight down to the ground, and then she gets the cure in the face, and boom, it's still does nothing. She's still a villain. But they there's this forced redemption for the character because, well, you were abused and brutalized by this man, and now you've breathed in this magic fairy dust that makes you not a killer or not have to be a killer.
Seems
Yeah,
like
it's just
a like who is this character? How long has she been in this state? Has she been like this since the explosion? Has she always been like a little off afterwards? Like, did he
it was
just
also
put?
kind of
Go ahead.
it's also kind of like the ending of WandaVision, like Black Widow. I'm sorry I blew your fucking face off. Can you forgive me? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
No
I love you, but
consequences. No
yeah.
consequences whatsoever.
Now, and then you have, and again, I've seen fans saying, now they're going to do a spin-off for the Widows and the Guardian. I was like, please no. I mean, the whole idea that Mama Widow and, Red Guardian have like this huge family of daughters, like you could do something like that. I don't know. I don't think it would work out that well. But yeah. And they did it again. The way you frame Natasha at the end and you think you're going to see, I wanted to see this fight. I want to see her arguing with Ross and then her. I want to see something of that fight for her to escape. And then, it skips to 2 weeks later and she's got the blonde hair going into Endgame. Or sorry, Infinity War, and I'm gonna go help break my friends out of prison. Like I want to see that fight, and I want to see the prison break. I'm sorry. And what else can you
Like,
do?
I was expecting a wicked battle between like all the Widows, Red Guardian versus Taskmaster, and where Taskmaster like either kicks their ass or like they just can barely hold her back kind of thing. But no, it was a letdown.
Yeah.
And they kind of like, again, to go back, like the fact that she was experimenting on has this chip in her brain that they come up with this wholly technological explanation for the photographic reflexes. Like you even see where it's like permission to activate Taskmaster protocol, and then that one widow goes in, like pops a flash drive in the back of Antonia's head, and she's standing there and watching all those fights on the screen. But it's like Ben said, it's the Prometheus doctrine. It's just being programmed into her. It's not, Taskmaster kicking back with a beer and a bowl of popcorn and watching a fight, Captain America versus Batroc the Leaper or something like that. I will say this about Dracov, the great actor Ray Winstone. He played a great sleazy character, and I don't know about you guys, is one of the most satisfying villain deaths in Marvel movies. Seriously, because I hated the guy so much, and he deserved to go out. He was a bitch, and he went out like a bitch.
But it's basically, CGI explosion absorbs him, and his glasses fly in the air.
He died the way he lived, as a bitch. I don't care about the CGI. He had an ambiguous
ending, so they're going to be... He's obviously going to come back.
I really hope not.
How many movies have you watched that have sequels? You know. Like, ambiguous fucking explosions. The villain always comes back.
I will only accept him back if he comes back as a brain and two eyeballs in a jar. With a little bit of a spine, like how they did Kane in RoboCop 2. I will accept that. But that being said, yeah, this is one of my most satisfying Marvel villain deaths. Because usually they die in some sort of explosion, like Whiplash, Titanium Man, and Iron Man 2. Not so much. Not satisfying. Again, Iron Man 3, the real Mandarin getting blown up like that. It's like, nah, it's not satisfying. It's seeing this guy and seeing that he was a huge piece of shit and gave absolutely not one care about anyone else within 10 feet of him, to have him go out like that. Yeah, that's satisfying. I mean, what's your favorite villain death in the Marvel movies, Ben?
In all the Marvel movies, most...
Satisfying?
Satisfying? Jeez, that is a hard question. There's been so many, it's hard to pick one that's like, yeah, that gets me in the sweet spot.
Or even favorite. I mean, you have a lot of people like Killmonger's death in
Black Panther.
You know, stuff like that. Everyone has different tastes. I'm just asking you, what's your favorite villain death?
Well, my favorite villain death has to be my favorite villain death in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is a hard question because I'm going through the deaths and none of them like really screen to me like any of the memorable movie deaths ever. They're just like, oh, the villain's dead. Like, it's a lot of them are fake outs. A lot of them aren't even deaths. Like, Loki had 3 fake outs. Red Skull had a cosmic cube incident, and you know, as much as I love Iron Man, Obadiah Stane's death is meh. Fucking Whiplash's death was more meh. It's like none of the deaths are really good. Even fucking Thanos's death in Endgame is basically him sitting down and dusting. It's like, I can't think of a great villain death. I think of deaths, and I think of a lot of them. Like, nothing quite catches me and makes me remember. Like, if I have to pick... Let me set the bar of what I think is a great cinematic death. Have you ever seen The Last Starfighter, JT?
Yeah.
And remember when the command ship was about to crash into the moon? Go ahead.
I got a great villain death.
Okay.
He may be your father, but he wasn't your daddy.
Okay, Ego's death was pretty good. But, like I said, when I think of big cinematic deaths, I think of Last Starfighter, command ship careening into the moon. The underling speaks to the commander, is like, what do we do? And then he just flips on his eyepiece. We die.
Yeah. You'll have to get back to me on that, because I would like to know what your favorite death, villain, or otherwise in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is. Although that is a really good example of a great cinematic death.
Yes.
I mean, same to you, Red. What's besides Ego, is there another one, or is that kind of like top tier for you?
It's kind of top tier for me.
Yeah. All right. And I was just looking up here because I was looking up to see the young actress Ever Anderson that played young Natasha. That's the daughter of Mila Jovovich and Paul W.S. Anderson.
Oh.
Who apparently, according to the wiki, was counseled by her parents to not go into acting, and she could not be dissuaded. So, do you, young lady.
Those Resident Evil movies aren't going to make themselves, JT.
Oh, God, no.
I think we found this trigger word.
No, it's just, I like the first two of those movies, and that's where I stop.
Oh.
Oddly enough, I only like the first two Children of the Corn movies. Everything after that can go die in a fire. But, is there anything else in the movie that you guys liked? I mean, we can't talk about the music because it was pretty much standard Marvel.
That's the one thing that music. Really aggravates me with Marvel music nowadays is it's all like it's like a toilet. You know, you go into a house and you see a toilet, you're like, yeah, you know you need to have a toilet, but no one thinks about it. It's like, it's there. It's there, it's treated as a utility. It's there, you don't need to have it. It doesn't really grab you. Like the last great Marvel score I can think of was probably Winter Soldier. Winter Soldier had like a spy thriller theme going on, and the score was really geared that way. Everything else was either remixes of existing stuff or really generic.
Notable scores, I agree with you. I mean, as far as using like existing music, I like the way they used music in Spider-Man Homecoming. And especially over the using Blitzkrieg Bop over the credits like that. But yeah, there wasn't... I mean, I love that bit where Natasha gets like the Quinjet version 3 or whatever model that is at that point, and you hear the refrains of the Avengers theme there as she takes off, and kind of made me remember of, you know, a movie that you and I both like that Red tells us we need to have our heads checked, the first cut of Justice League, like where you hear the refrains of the John Williams Superman music, where
the Danny Elfman, yeah, Batman music. It's well, that's, yeah, that's the thing is like Danny Elfman worked on Avengers and Avengers Age of Ultron. And Danny Elfman had a musical theory about these movies, and I know we're segueing off, but I have to go here. Danny Elfman had a musical theory of every character has a theme, and every theme has an earworm in every person who listens to it, and has an emotional connection. And a great example of this is if you watch the first two Avengers movies, he tries to honor the themes that the characters have, that the other directors that came before and the other score makers that came before tried to pin on there. Iron Man didn't really have a theme song, except in the first movie, he's like, dun 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 dun, like from the old Mary Marvel shows that they, Jon Favreau talked to the score guy to sort of amp that up into like a Vegas-y sound, but Danny Elfman in Avengers: Age of Ultron tried to have the, you know, inserted the Iron Man 3 theme in there for Iron Man to sort of like create that audio continuity in our heads. And of course, every time Cap shows up, it's the Captain America the First Avenger theme, dun 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 dun. You know, it's Cap has a theme that's stuck. Iron Man, the guy who started this whole thing, doesn't really have a theme that people associate with him. It's like everyone else sort of gets like the Avengers fanfare. And yeah, the one thing that I noted about this is there was one, like, I think it was the last trailer for Black Widow, did a Russian version of the Avengers fanfare. like a very Soviet chorus-sounding Avengers, like...
Mm-hmm.
And I have to agree with Danny Elfman that that when you have movies like this with characters that are in our zeitgeist, you have to have like a little bit of a audio earworm you put in there that triggers that part of your brain that makes you nostalgic for these characters. And that's why I think Danny Elfman did a lot of heavy lifting. That none of that Hans Zimmerman like fucking throwing a harpsichord into a wood chipper kind of music anymore. It's like there's something visceral and nostalgic about what he's doing that, like I said, that made me picture a version of the characters I more relate to than the Snyder versions, which made what Justice League work for me. And yes, I know it's a trick, but I'm happily tricked.
How did you feel about the music, Red?
I didn't really care. It seemed bland to me.
Yeah.
Just the usual Marvel music.
Yeah, but no pop songs this time. No, Nirvana. No, Ooga Chaka. No.
Well, they did kind of have Nirvana, because if I'm not mistaken, I think they had that really weird rendition of Smells Like Teen Spirit over the credits, like once we leave Cuba and we go into the flashes of the Red Room and all that.
Okay, you're right. They did have really weird rendition. It smells like Teen Spirit. But the reason why I bring up Nirvana is the really bad decision some asshole had that Captain Marvel's song should be "Come As You Are."
Yeah.
Like when you're a Nirvana fan like I am and you know what those songs are about, like that cracks me up. 'Cause Come As You Are is him fucking his girlfriend in the ass. That's what the song's about.
Now that's what you picture with Chick Carol Danvers.
Yeah, and speaking of Carol Danvers,
And
no, I just I bear this bears mentioning how a lot of people online lost their is like they're like coming to Brie Larson's defense and everything because apparently she was supposed to be voicing Captain Marvel in the forthcoming What If series, and now she's not, just like RDJ was supposed to come back and voice Iron Man, but that's not happening, and everyone thought. Didn't know they were talking about What If, that they thought they were talking about like the Marvels, like the Captain Marvel sequel, and everyone was losing their damn minds.
Well, RDJ pretty much dropped everything Disney and Marvel.
yeah, his
Like on
contract is
all
done.
his, all on all his social media, he doesn't follow Disney, has nothing to do with them, shit like that.
And I say to him, kudos. He's done his 10 years. He's done his service for his contract and then some. He's done two contracts worth of movies for them. And if he's done, let him be fucking done. He doesn't have to be friends with Chris Evans. He doesn't have to be friends with Chris Hemsworth. He doesn't have to be friends with Chris Pratt. He just let him live his fucking life. He doesn't have to keep up the appearance of being Tony Stark for you fanboys for the rest of his fucking life. Just let him live his life.
Yeah, but I mean, it's what if, so. Yeah, that's thought I'd bring that up.
Yeah. I just had to get that out of my system because so many people think they're owed Robert Downey Jr. for the rest of his life keeping up this appearance. And I'm like, are you guys mental?
Are you retarded?
Pretty much, just
Are you stupid?
like he could go move on a fucking tropical island for the rest of his life, and I'd be like, good for him. Just let him. That doesn't, he doesn't have to be in another movie for the rest of his life. Just let him. Just let him fucking live his life. If he's never in the movie again, I'd be like, great, fine. Not my business.
Yeah. That being said, I don't know how much more we can talk about the movie.
I think we talked more about like the behind-the-scenes shit than the movie, but yeah. Red, what is Smells Like Teen Spirit about?
You don't want to know.
Argle bargle marbles in my mouth?
It Smells Like Teen Spirit is one of the songs. Like, some of the songs he's never revealed what they're about. And fucking Smells Like Teen Spirit is one of them. And okay. There's lots of theories of what it is. What it's about, though.
Yeah. Well, that's just a theory. Okay. Yeah. Well, all I know is Kurt Cobain fucking loved Smells Like Nirvana. He thought that was fucking hilarious, and I just have to say that shows he's a good sport. He was a good sport.
Well, he fucking hated performing with Smells Like Teen Spirit. Because in his mind, he's like, it's all you guys want to hear, because it was the top of the charts. It was the most popular song on the mainstream. But what about all this other fucking music my band has been putting out for the past fucking 10 years? You guys don't like that? Go fuck yourselves. That was his attitude.
Well, the funniest thing about Nirvana, I know this is a really weird segue, but I heard this story. David Bowie loves to tell this story. Is David Bowie would like perform a set, and someone walk up to him and say, "It's so great that you did a cover of a Nirvana song," and they're talking about The Man Who Sold the World, which is a David Bowie song.
Yeah. Well.
All right, well, so Black Widow. I wouldn't say don't watch it, but I would say you could pretty much figure out what the plot is from watching the trailers, because this movie happened before the movies that we already saw. We know that this is all about getting the characters to their starting places, and we know what the starting places are, so it's like...
There's no stakes.
Yes.
You know Black Widow's going to survive. You know she's going to be in the next... in the movies joining up. It's... That's why it's so bland.
Yeah,
they just gotta get it needed to come out sometime after Civil War.
Yes. All right. Well, that's our final thoughts. JT, you have any final thoughts?
I'd say check the movie out if you can. I give it a solid 6.5. You know, it's worth watching, and it's don't take our criticisms of the flaws in the movie wrong, folks. Like, it's still a solid Marvel movie. It's just they could have done so much better.
I think, as I said at the start of the show, lots of the people have gone from adoration to obligation to meh, and I don't think this is gonna strong enough to get them from meh back to obligation or adoration. Red, final thoughts.
I give the movie a 6 out of 10. It's watchable. Like, you come home, you put on Disney Plus. If you want to pay the extra fucking $30 for the movie,
guilty.
You have a beer, you eat a pizza, and you just enjoy a fucking movie. Like, you have nothing else to do, do it. No big fucking deal. But it's not one of the best Marvel movies. It's not fucking... It's not Winter Soldier caliber.
I'd say it's around Thor 2.
Yeah. Better than Thor 2. I'd almost put it on the same level as Iron Man 3. I mean, I like Iron Man 3. I think it's totally fine. I'm just... not in an all fired hurry to see it again.
Fair enough. Anyways, this year's Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Reading.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.